It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
I'll ask anybody's question but yours. You're an idiot. And really, a disloyal person.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Disloyal Idiots, a Fans First Sports Network podcast. I am joining you as sometimes recently, Steve Haller. Seems like Pregler's actually making it more often than I am these last couple of weeks. But Christian's always here, and we got the crew back together. The band is back together. So how we doing coming off the SU victory over Army, folks?
What a game to come back to bring the band back together, huh?
Full-blown, we go from full sickos to fuller sickos?
Yeah.
I thought that game was interesting.
A.K.A. sicko.
Interesting is one way to put it, Andy. Please elaborate.
I mean, if you, this is basically, you know, doing the whole meme of, you know, if my grandmother had two wheels, she'd be a bicycle. But if you remove the opening 75-yard, 17-play drive and the garbage time touchdown, the Syracuse defense played at an elite level, and a lot of the underlying metrics took that into account when updating their Syracuse profiles. Now, the weird part is that I am slightly more concerned about the offense than I was, but the offense also moved the ball incredibly efficiently by regular standards, just not necessarily by the amount that we thought that you could against this Army defense. And I guess that is, like, the takeaway for this game is that Syracuse survived and they won, and that's all good, but they only beat Army by 13 points, which is what Vegas expected. And so by that logic, Syracuse is going to lose to Clemson by 9, and I think that there is a large section of this fan base that is expecting Syracuse to make this weekend's game a potential upset. And I'm not sure that's on the cards.
And that section of the fan base needs to reevaluate things. Because no matter what, we're still Syracuse, and they're still Clemson. Yes, an upset is more on the cards than it has been in a while in the Clemson match, judging by how both teams are currently playing. However, regression to the mean on both sides means there's a good chance Syracuse loses this week.
And ironically, in a weird way in narrative, it's both offenses that are going to have to decide how that game goes, because both offenses are question mark, question mark, question mark.
What's an offense?
Yeah, Let's jump into the Syracuse's offense before we talk about the defense. The fact that they were not on the field a lot is something that I want to address later when we talk about overall, like, holistic, you know, coaching things that came out of this game that I have questions about. But on the actual execution of the offense, we now know that Isaiah Jones is just going to be probably out for the year after being told by Dino that he did not miss most of the Purdue game due to injury, and then being told after the game that he is dealing with a significant injury he sustained during the Purdue game. So I'm a little bit mad about that. But the offense, like, without Damian Alford looks worrisome. Is that fair to say? Or with just Damian Alford looks worrisome?
Yes and no. That's what I'm going to say. Because, yes, Alford is now your only receiver that has experience, just in general. I mean, you're relying on Donovan Brown and Amari Hatcher as your number two and three, who both of them probably have a high ceiling, just based on what we know. But they're nowhere near that ceiling yet. And so you're relying a lot on Alford to do what he did against Army, which was use his natural athleticism to try and make plays. And because of that, you also now have to rely on Garrett Schrader being more accurate, which, as we saw, especially in the first half, that's still a problem.
He was very accurate to Army.
You make great points.
And we were, you know what? 2 weeks ago, we were complaining about all these drop balls. And if it weren't for drop balls, Schrader would have had two more picks.
This is also very true.
So we can't have our cake and eat it too here, folks.
But then we also have to talk about the other thing that is with Schrader inaccuracy, which still just infuriates me to no end, because I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, Jason Beck was here last year, right?
Last I heard, yes.
And so he knows that Robert Anae drew up a ton of plays to set up Schrader over the middle. Yes, granted, a lot of, over 80% of those were to Aronde Gadsden. I get it. But it seems like those worked.
One would think.
I think that this is where the Gadsden thing is actually worrisome for me, because this is where the Isaiah Jones thing is more worrying for me, because it was really clear Jones was going to step into that Gadsden slot receiver, big body, run routes over the middle. And I think from what we saw with Damian Alford, Damian Alford does one thing really well, and that is run down the route. And jump up for the ball, which is a great thing to have.
It's a great compliment to what you were talking about over the middle. It's not
exactly.
It can't be the only thing. We got to have a fire and ice. You can't just have fire. You can't just have ice.
And I think this is where we are going to really see the creativity of Beck come. If it's there, it's got to come out now, because I do think that part of the reason why we've not seen a whole lot over the middle is that Syracuse does not have any pass catching tight ends on the roster right now. And they,
what do you
do
mean?
Not
Dan Valori caught a pass. What are you talking about?
I was
going
to say, you're forgetting Thunder Dan.
I stand by my statement. The Syracuse has no pass catching tight ends on this roster.
Now we can go back. Let's put a cork in the tight end thing, because I do want to come back to that.
Okay. But the premise being, I don't like, when you look at the wide receivers that you have left, no one naturally fits into that role. And so now you're talking about scheming plays that are going to either take time or that rely on a certain level of timing that you probably can't implement at this point in the season. And I think this is where the creativity is going to really come into play, because I'm with you, Christian. The growth of Schrader's passing game is not that he suddenly can hit the out routes towards the sideline from the far hash. That is just never going to be something Schrader can do. And you only ask him to make those throws when you know that the coverage is going to be soft and he can basically lob that throw in. The throws over the middle are where he was able to succeed as a passer, and you need to have that in the offense. Otherwise, we're going back to the very one-dimensional days where It's Schrader run or Schrader throw deep. But my biggest concern right now is just like looking at this roster. I don't think there's any wide receiver that you can realistically plug and play into the offensive scheme that we have seen so far over the last 2 years and expect any kind of successful results just plugging and playing. You need to fundamentally alter the scheme, fundamentally alter the route combinations that are being run. And that long-term, I think this game showed long-term, this is going to be an issue for this offense that they now have to work through against in the toughest three games that they have on the schedule.
Now, might I suggest something that might not be as scheme altering, but at the same time could also be scheme altering based on how Syracuse has practiced or not? Why not throw the ball to one? And by one, for people who are living under a rock, that's LaQuint Allen.
Yeah, and we did a little.
A little. And why not even use him over in the middle? I mean, like, Christian McCaffrey wheel routes work for a reason. And I'm not saying LaQuint Allen is Christian McCaffrey. But if Dino Babers is going to say LaQuint Allen is Marcus Allen, like, why not lean into that a bit?
Yeah. Now, in order schematically to do that, you also need to have tight ends that can block and or be a threat to release. Which brings me back to the tight end thing with Thunderdam, because somehow he became our best blocking tight end now.
Yeah, I remember writing that in a Slack.
Yeah, like
that is literally why I said we don't have a pass catching tight end. I do not want Dan Vellari running routes if we are throwing the ball down the field, because somebody has to fucking block an edge rusher. Sorry for dropping the F-bomb, but like that.
That's why I brought that in with the LaQuint Allen thing, is because schematically you either need, unless you're going to just fly, you need either your running back or your tight end to be able to function as a blocker. Now, that said, you run something like that tight end wheel, and if it's, or that running back wheel, and if it's not open, you have Vellari release late and dump to him when everybody's already cleared off. And it's like, oh, wait, these schemes can work and things can happen. But we need to get out of the mold we're in now that was molded around Gadsden.
I mean, chip block fades have been a part of the NFL game for God knows how long.
For hi, Tony Gonzalez has a whole career to say hi to.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I mean, it'd be nice. Like, I think the last time I remember something like that was the throwback in '98. Mildly ironically, but not too far off. But yeah, the I don't know where. What do we think we need to do more to get Allen involved in this offense? Because we did see his legs to a degree, and he got over 100 yards on the ground this week. But do we need the ball in his hands more and somewhere else?
Who do you know has spare body parts, specifically of the lower body type?
Well, you not want my... I was going to say, you're talking to two guys right now who probably have the worst knees of any podcasters out there.
Great, that's fine. But do you know people who can donate them to Syracuse, particularly to Caitlin Ellis and Joe Moore?
That'd be nice. That would be very nice. And have we heard?
Because that's probably your best solution right now.
It may be. And that would hypothetically also shore up some of the Schrader issues with getting flushed, especially against a much stronger Clemson defensive front this week.
And it may also mean that you may only have to do five, especially because if you bring Ellis on the left side, Curtis and Ellis on the left side can hold it down pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
I think this is actually one of the interesting things this year. So shout out, it hasn't been updated through week four, but this is through week three of the college football season. These numbers are probably going to be adjusted a bit. But Stats of War, who runs CFB Graphs, has updated his site for this year's data. And the efficiency numbers that he does are really interesting to me. And this year he's changed the offense. He's changed the offensive rankings and defensive rankings to track overall efficiency, rushing efficiency, drop back efficiency, and early down efficiency. And this is something where I think if you're Syracuse, like, this is the red flag of the offense and why you need to figure out this offensive line setup. Syracuse overall efficiency, their rushing efficiency is 47th in the country, and their early down efficiency is 45th in the country. And I think that that kind of tracks, because we've seen Beck have a commitment to trying to run the ball on early downs. However, Syracuse's drop back passing efficiency is 12th in the country. And that is a number that I would expect to regress a bit just based off of Garrett Schrader and the lack of wide receivers we have. However, if that number is going to regress, then the early down success rate needs to get better. And this is, I think, where what you guys are talking about becomes so key. Like, getting LaQuint Allen is an electric playmaker in a way that Sean Tucker wasn't. Sean Tucker was brute force in a running back body. And LaQuint Allen definitely has some of that power. Like, we saw him rip off, you know, break plenty of tackles the last 2 weeks. But he is somebody who, if you put him in space, he can do a lot of damage. And I think that, I know we talk about tempo. I know that these college games are going quicker than ever right now, and teams are getting off less plays per game. And I think for Syracuse, like, I know we kind of went away from tempo because the referees are starting to control it a little bit more. At this point, I want to see Syracuse run more, you know, 11 personnel, 12 personnel for entire drives and prevent teams from subbing. And the offensive line stuff comes really front and center in order to make that happen, because Army was taking advantage every time that Syracuse subbed to slow down the pace of the game and get a read on what Syracuse's formation slash, you know, oh, like, basically disrupt the flow of the offense. And they did it pretty efficiently. And I think that that is going to be replicated throughout the ACC play, considering how effective it was. And that, to me, is very much predicated on the O-line play. It's very much predicated on trusting to have Valari as a blocking tight end consistently, being able to...
Words you thought you never were going to say at the beginning of this season.
No, words you definitely never thought you were going to say 2 years ago when he came in as a quarterback.
That too.
When he came in as the next Eric Dungy?
Yes. All that said, I'm that, really
that
glad
tweet, that, that tweet of me announcing his transfer to Syracuse is still one of my most liked tweets.
That's amazing. I'm glad he's found a rhythm, at least, though. That's it's always good to see. Like, for some reason, you always see quarterbacks move to tight end, and it's good to see one actually succeed at it. Or it seems like succeeding at this point.
You were the one that was saying, like, in our, you know, in our Slack chat, like, it's weird, but quarterbacks usually end up being good blockers for some reason.
I don't know why. It's
just don't look at what Geno Smith tried to do today.
Don't look at what Geno Smith tries to do most days. Smith, all I can think about, and any Syracuse fan can remember that game with him just sitting there dumbfounded on the phones up to the offensive coordinator, like, I don't know what to do. And that was one of my favorite games to watch as a Syracuse fan. Just
dominating. Oh, so Tommy Reese with Alabama's quarterback room right now.
Yes.
Hey. So I think this is actually this is a great time. We kind of talked about the offensive line. We kind of talked about the wide receiver room. We kind of talked about Schrader. I guess we can start with Steve here. Like, the takeaway that I have from the Army game on the offensive side of the ball is that this offense is probably going to have flashes where it looks really good, because once the offense got into a rhythm in that second half and they were able to dictate the tempo a little bit more, they were clicking in a way that felt very reminiscent of 2018. However, unlike the 2018 team, injuries have kind of robbed them of that. Like, for that team, it was Steve Ishmael. For this team, it was Aronde Gadsden as just the guy that you hit in that, like, 7 to 10 yard first down passing play to keep the chains moving. Obviously, they're not going to have that, and I think at times we're going to see it stall out. But I'm just curious from your perspective, like, obviously getting the offensive line healthy will probably make some big changes here. but I'm wondering if you had any other takeaways from this game, specifically on offense. And this is I am literally teeing you up to talk about the offensive line and protections if you want to, because yeah, I feel like you want to.
Here's my hot take. The offensive line didn't look that bad this weekend.
I'd agree with that.
I think a lot of Schrader is starting to do that thing, and he settled in more in the second half, but he was doing that thing that he did 2 years ago where he got happy feet. And when he gets happy feet, he ends up literally running around tackles blocking for him, and it in effect moves the pocket to the outside of the tackle, which I'm not a doctor, doesn't really work well. There's this thing called the defensive end that's usually outside the tackle, and he tries to tackle you, and it doesn't, that's not good. But when Schrader stayed in containment in the pocket, it actually, like, he had time to throw. When he stepped up through his line, he had time to throw. When he actually, like, read what was happening, it worked well. And I think there was a lot more towards the second half. I mean, I say towards the second half, he ran six plays in the first half. Like, the sample size is pretty limited as to what happened in the first half. I remember looking up during that first drive, and there was 6 minutes left in the first quarter, and Army still had the ball, and I was like, what's happening? Like,
I was talking with Mike during this game, and he said basically this is a reward for everyone who had to sit through the Western Michigan game.
This was the consolation prize. Speed up that first half. Yeah. And but I mean, the run blocking was probably the best we've seen this year. The pass blocking was probably close to the best we've seen this year. Again, the levels of defensive front we've seen this year haven't been absolutely stellar by any stretch, but they've at least been up to a modicum of the challenge. Now, if we can get some of those wideouts that are now forced into play and now have at least a game in their new roles under their belt, and Trevor Pena back healthy, or at least healthy-ish, judging by the fact he wasn't back there on returns, that combination might actually lead to a little bit better performance this weekend. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Here's what I'm going to say. It's going to sound weird. Because I'm going to say two things that sound impossible to do at the same time. But Schrader needs to be, along the line of what Steve is saying, he needs to be more decisive, which is something we didn't see in that game. It was very decisive in the Purdue game.
Yeah.
But then along the same lines, he needs to be also diversive as well. Because what we've seen from each of the games is Colgate, Western Michigan, and Army is when Schrader escapes the pocket, he's looking to pass. Against Purdue, when he escapes the pocket, he's looking to run. And in that terms, he's not being diversive enough in order to confuse the offenses and confuse the opposing defense into determining what he's trying to do. Now, against Army, like you said, there were times where it felt like Schrader was not being decisive enough once he was outside of the pocket. But once he is, I think he's got to mix it up more in terms of whether he's going to run or whether he's going to throw, because that's what makes Syracuse's offense dynamic and unpredictable. If we want to avoid the one-dimensionalism that I fear, like most of us are fearing Syracuse is getting into, Schrader's got to mix that up more.
Yeah, and that was something we saw a couple of times. Like, even when he stayed in the pocket, he committed to staying in the pocket. And I distinctly can remember at least two different plays where he took coverage sacks, probably the only two sacks he took all game. They were both coverage sacks, and there was a running lane open in front of him. And I don't know if it was by design or what, but he did not break loose and did not try and break contain and get outside, and probably could have. And I mean, if teams are at a point where you're taking a coverage sack, you're going to have space to run. Like, the opposing defenses are not going to be running a spy and also force you into coverage sack. And if they do, we've got a lot more problems. So yeah,
problem is we might, but you know, that's a topic for another day.
Yeah, I think that this is one of the things about Schrader that has been kind of me coming to terms with Garrett Schrader, is realizing that he's never going to be Eric Dungy, and that also we got to stop comparing people to Eric Dungy. He is one of the top five quarterbacks in program history, might be top three of all time. Like, comparing anybody to the third best quarterback in program history, that's a dumb idea. Let's just stop doing that.
You know how I know Andy's young?
I mean, we can go into this. This is off-season topic. I firmly believe that it is McNabb, McPherson, Dungy, Graves, Nassib. 3 through 5, you can, there's arguments to be had in any direction, but I think that those are the five.
I'm going to make our fan base really hate me and say that I actually prefer Garrett Schrader's game to Eric Dungy in a heartbeat.
Wow. Steve, talk me through this, because I was just about to say that, like, Schrader is a way better runner.
He's a way better runner, and he's a way better passer. Dungy was a much better decision maker, but Schrader has a better arm and is better on his feet.
See, I think Dungy had a better, well, I guess this is actually decision making. There was nobody who could hit a streaking guy like Dungy could, but yeah, you're right. Those were all, like, he just committed to that throw. He didn't wait to see if the guy was open.
Right.
He just threw it to a spot and said, get there.
And he had some of the receivers that could get there with him.
Yeah. It helps if your receivers are Ahmed Etawo, Steve Ishmael, Jamal Custis.
And if we didn't have feet made of glass this year, he would have had two of those guys probably.
Oh.
If think about this receiving core, if the two that are out likely for the season with Jones's latest happy fun time and Pena healthy at the beginning of the year, like, you've got those three across with Alfred running streaks. Tell me that isn't as dangerous as anything Dungy had, and it also takes the pressure off of Schrader and makes him have to do less.
I mean, you're 100% right. This, what's really frustrating about this year is that if healthy, with the way the ACC is going, 10-2 is absolutely a viable outcome. Like, absolutely.
Why? Just the problem because the is ACC that with... is pants on head right now?
Exactly. Like, North Carolina...
Hey, Cal's coming next year.
They can still get back in this. By the way, how worn out is that going to be in the next couple of years?
I just watched Matt Canada do something stupid again. Back to things that make me happy.
I was going to say this is.
But in other news, water is wet.
Right.
I was going to say, if we're talking about the ACC being pants on wet, like, every offensive coordinator in the city of Pittsburgh is terrible. UNC was losing to said terrible offensive coordinator this week for a good period of time. Clemson is Clemson. Like, it's just there. The problem is
the
that
Bills
this
can't
team
play
has
at
gone.
The Meadowlands and then win 37-3 today.
Yeah.
Nothing football, makes sense.
Football is football sense. Is weird. Football is chaotic, but it's also very predictable. And it's almost always predictable that when your best players get hurt, your team does worse. And Arondé Gaston.
Again, Pittsburgh, high end talent. When the high end talent of Pittsburgh gets hurt, they look like crap.
And so.
Like DJ Watt last year.
It's so true.
I was going to say, Andy, for anybody listening, Andy just kind of twitched. So
just everything hurts.
Side note, I saw something on Twitter last week that said Pitt, the Steelers have literally become Iowa. Incredible defenses with the fans knowing the name of the offensive coordinator more than anybody else.
I mean, if you look at the jerseys, they're the same jerseys. So, you know,
in fact, they are the same team.
Yes.
Life-changing defenses with offensive coordinators and fan bases are actively chanting at games to fire.
Right. I'd have Jason Beck in a heartbeat over Matt Canada. I don't think that that's like a controversial opinion right here.
Syracuse matched up against Matt Canada?
Oh, boy, do I.
That was 2017.
Jesus, really?
Yeah. It's been, because, he had a weird career too. But this is... Yeah. We are so off the rails here.
Steve, if you forgot, Matt Canada was at one point the offensive coordinator for LSU.
Yeah, I just forgot that was 2017.
Yes.
Huh. Well, I learned something today.
Back to the Syracuse. This is going to be so great. Okay.
Oh, you know what? Garrett, do you know where Matt Canada started his coaching career?
Do not say Syracuse.
No. Indiana University. You know what that might be indicative of?
Home field apparel gave us Matt Canada. Connor, I hate you.
You guys were blaming Indiana for releasing Matt Canada onto the world.
He played at Indiana and he coached in Indiana. This is where it came from.
The original 9-win Indiana is Matt Canada, and I am going to make Connor make a Matt Canada was born here t-shirt, and I would wear it because home field t-shirts are the comfiest shirts that you can possibly get. Same with their hoodies, same with their joggers, same with their quarter zips. They have a lot of really good stuff that you should wear because it's really awesome, and they make tons of designs for things that are not inducive of Matt Canada, like great retro Syracuse shirts. You should go check them out, homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code NUNES23, NUNES23, for 15% off your first order.
Hold on. In my last Matt Canada facts for the day, did you know that we faced Matt Canada in 5 successive years? Or no, 3 out of 5 successive years. And on 3 different teams.
Oh, wait, Pitt? Yeah, LSU?
So before LSU. He was LSU, he was the Pitt offensive coordinator.
Yeah, Pitt, LSU, and who's the third one?
NC State.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Was he?
No, he was there before the Pitt game. It wasn't the stupid game.
No, but was he the 2019 NC State game?
No. He was the 2014, was it? Or 2015, one of those years. 2019, he was not coaching anywhere. It was after his Maryland stint before he went to the Steelers.
Wait, was he in Maryland in 2019?
Maryland in 2018.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, he was the 2014 when they beat Syracuse at the Dome 24-17. That was a Matt Canada game. Man, this man has been making my life miserable for that Syracuse for a long time.
For 2017?
No, 2014, right?
Oh, 2014 would have been.
Was this Mitch Kimball or AJ Long?
That might have been.
Or Austin Wilson.
Was that Officer Mahoney?
No, Mahoney was two years later. That was either Wilson, Long, or Kimball.
I think that was an Austin. That might have been an Austin Wilson. Oh, God. Wow. We're hitting the.
2014 was an awful year for quarterbacks.
I'm glad Matt Canada has brought us this much weirdness to the podcast because we really needed
more. Okay. So you were correct. AJ Long was AJ Long was the quarterback.
Oh, okay. The other three were on the roster.
Oh yeah.
I want to let you know that he's no longer a Syracuse player on ESPN, which I think is very funny. I will give you $100 if you can guess who the NC State quarterback was who started that game and beat Syracuse.
Oh man, it was the guy who was there forever, wasn't it?
2014.
God, who was that? It was the guy that was there forever. Oh no, this was their Trevor Cooney. Oh man, I forgot.
I have no idea.
Jacoby Brissett.
Oh my God, it was?
Oh God, here we go.
The 2014 ACC season that Syracuse entered into was pure chaos. I forgot about how Syracuse was so bad that year that I kind of forgot what was going on around Syracuse.
Guys, like, remember, this was my introduction to Syracuse football.
Yeah, you've got the full bane going on. Like you were born in it, you were molded by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Adonis Amin Moore led the team in rushing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this no, is PTG. What we thought. PTG just took
was,
it. Yeah.
This was after PTG had a great 2013.
Yeah, he gained 47 yards that day. Adonis Amin Moore gained 38. Jesus. Gerard. So the receiving court, Gerard West, Steve.
Gerard West, the last time we had a non-transfer tight end do something.
Well, he was a wideout, though.
Really?
He was a full-blown wideout, if I remember right. Yep. 6'3", 209. His senior year when Ishmael was kind of in his shadow before he broke out.
But that was also Ishmael's freshman year.
Yeah. So it goes from that to Ben Lewis, Elvin Cornelius, Josh Paris. There's your tight end. And then Devontae McFarland, PTG, were the other people that received passes that day. Jesus. Wow.
I just want to let you know, this is going to be the last time we talk about Matt Canada here.
Is it though?
Tonight or ever? it better be. I'm looking at the box score for the Syracuse game. This offense of NC State, quarterback Jacoby Brissett, in the NFL, has been in the NFL for a long time. Leading rusher Jalen Samuels was in the NFL for a long time, is still in the NFL. Their receiver, Marquez Valdez-Scantling. This NC State team had three NFL players at the three most important skill positions. They went 8-5. There is nothing more Matt Canada than being in college and wasting that.
By eight, and do you, they were 5-4 when they met us too. Like they, yeah, that Whoa. Was ugh. Wow.
I get the NC State fans and Syracuse fans actually have a lot more in common, because when you start going through those rosters and you see the results, I have questions. Let's talk about the defense.
So wait, is that why it all culminated in Casillo going there for the stupid game?
Yes.
That was the ultimate culmination of everything.
I have to admit.
And the quarterback that I thought was there forever, that wasn't Brissett, Ryan Finley. That's who I was thinking of.
Oh yeah, he was there for eons. He was the Carl Krauser of NC State, yeah. Wow.
There's always gonna be one. Defense. Again, as we let off the top, they were good outside of the one drive that broke everybody's soul, and then the garbage play drive. I think the most interesting thing about there are two things about this defense that I want to talk about really quickly before we get into the Clemson preview. The first is that the linebacker rotation is confusing. I thought it was Rocky Long benching players. Christian, you seem to think it was just like, look, he's just giving them reps and trying to divvy up snap count. It could be both. I don't know. I thought it was one of the more interesting elements of the game.
Now looking back at it, it's probably a mixture of both.
Yeah. The backup linebacking group, the twos, did a better job of stuffing the run than the ones did.
But they both had, in the first half, they both had one good drive and one bad drive.
Fair.
It's all a wash.
I thought it was weird. The biggest concern I have for the defense, though, is still the run defense. And Steve, this is probably something that you appreciate a little bit. I don't know if you were able to listen to the game with the broadcasting volume on or not.
It was tough in the dome to hear the broadcast.
Okay. So yes, that's right. I assumed you were at the game. I couldn't remember. But one of the things that the broadcast was talking about.
He had Sebastian giving him live play-by-play.
I did. It was mildly entertaining.
See, that kid's going to Newhouse.
That offensive line with a Newhouse scholarship. Ooh, Steve's salivating right now.
Could you imagine? Who's an offensive lineman going to Newhouse?
I'm sure, actually, there's...
I don't know.
I could actually see that more so than other combinations. But I'm mostly interested in asking Steve about this, because one of the things that they were trying, it was tough because not the greatest play-by-play crew that has ever existed. But one of the things that they were trying to explain was that, look, stopping the run defensively is not as simple as just pinning your ears back and running forward. You have to kind of attack lanes and attack gaps strategically and have good timing. And there's a whole song and dance that happens when you don't have four guys up front who are just taking on and winning the individual battles of the double teams. I'm interested, Steve, to get your perspective on this, because I do think that it was weird, but I thought Darton looked better against Purdue than he did against Army.
He did 100%.
Which was weird for me, and I couldn't figure out if that was because he was going up against guys that are actually the same size, so we couldn't get that weird over-leverage thing that he does because he's so much shorter than D1, you know, typical size guys. But it did seem like the defensive line especially was having a really hard time stopping the run. Like, in general, like, the linebackers obviously weren't great, but the linebackers were getting met at the second level by a lot of really angry Army men.
What I will say also, just in addition to this, is that Josh Black had a really, really good tweet about this.
You were going to say he had a really, really good game, and I was like, did I miss something on eligibility?
No. Josh Black has actually been, like, on fire on Twitter about just, like, being a Syracuse fan and cheering up Syracuse.
Nice.
And also, like, giving some nice analysis. What he said was, running a 3-3-5 is legit one of the worst case scenarios against this Army offense. All the 100%. Post-snap movements by the DL don't really matter against the offensive philosophy. You just got to stiffen up on those doubles and not get driven back, which is easier said than done, however. Which he also followed up by saying, I'm not going to lie, I'd absolutely hate to play against Army's offense as a DL because you're basically getting doubled every single play.
100%. And that's, I mean, the way they're targeting and optioning, like, no matter how much they've moved away from the triple option, you noticed, like, there was a lot of either, I don't want to say RPO, but it was like RRO. It was a matter of which run was happening. But the offensive line philosophy, like he mentioned, is a straight double to a backer. And they're just protecting a gap and they're cleaning it out. And that's all they need to do. And until they started shifting the defensive line and bringing stunts to, not stunts necessarily, but bringing, you know, presence to certain gaps, it really, it's a pain in the ass to play against as a defensive lineman. Like, you can peel anybody out of a hole that you need to if you're guaranteed to double him every single play, which is what Army was doing. And that's why it was, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dirt every single play that first drive. There was nothing that they could do. Like, you just don't have the men. You don't have anything to stop it. And until they made some adjustments, there's nothing happening.
One thing I will say is that also, like, Syracuse also has to learn, just in general, because this is a trend over the past few years, Syracuse also has to learn how to tackle without having guys fall forward.
You can do
because
that.
It's tough. Because there's been a lot of tackles, especially in that Army game, where they would actually get good tackles and stop them at the line of scrimmage, but they'd fall forward and get 3 yards.
Right.
Right. And I think one of the things that I am weirdly a little bit more optimistic about with the Clemson game that's upcoming on the defensive side of the ball is that Garrett Riley seems really intent on running his game script instead of maybe attacking the team the way it should be. Like, there were some play calls in that Florida State game where the way that what they were calling didn't make sense in the scenario. They were still really intelligent plays, but it's just really clear that Cade Klubnik and those wide receivers just weren't going to beat FSU running certain concepts. And I feel like especially now, they really want to spread the field out. And if there's one thing that we know the 3-3-5 can help you handle, is a team that wants to play in space. And Syracuse has guys that can chase down good athletes in space and make solid tackles and close out effectively. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to be like, I'm not saying that Syracuse's defense is going to thrive against Clemson. I'm just saying that when you're talking about stylistically what Army wants to do and constrict space and kind of, you know, run you over inch by inch versus what Clemson wants to do, the defensive matchup kind of favors Clemson more schematically than Army. it's just naturally, you know, Clemson's running out there with Will Shipley, who I am genuinely terrified might end up with like 6 touchdowns and pull a Raheem Mostert on us on Saturday.
That is literally the problem, is that if Garrett Riley actually, like you said, gets smart and decides, hey, you know what we're going to do on first and second down? Just give the ball to Shipley.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I would love it.
Remember what happened during the last drive last year. The game-winning drive for Clemson last year was give the ball to Shipley. And that was it.
Yeah.
And
that's all they needed to do.
And not much has changed in either team to tell me that won't be a winning strategy once again.
I am going to make an assumption that Clemson is probably going to attempt to run a bit more aggressively and attempt to attack Syracuse through the ground. But I also would just like to put it out there that, look, Garrett Riley, if you really, really want to just keep throwing swing passes to Will Shipley, go for it. Because I weirdly feel very comfortable with Marlo Wax and Elijah Clark closing out on
that, that'll be
Shipley in the backfield.
That'll be Elijah Clark.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is going to be if those swing passes go to Jason Simmons' side.
Yeah.
Because yes. That's a little hit and miss.
Literally.
And
it's either a hit or a whiff. Yeah, I don't know. I guess we're back to the Steve goes to the trenches again, but I'm yes. worried about what we're facing on the defensive side. It's not as good as they've been in the past, but you still have Tyler Davis and Xavier Thomas. And oh, by the way, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. is still there.
Yeah.
He's still there.
Yeah, he's a junior this year.
Why?
Also, I'm old because how? How is that a junior? Come on. But yeah.
That's all Andy's relatives when seeing Joey Porter Jr. getting drafted last year.
Right, exactly.
That's how I felt with Joey Porter Jr. getting drafted. You don't even need to go to my relatives. That was a me thing.
Rick Warrow, Justin Maskell, that whole defensive front is not going to be fun.
I mean, that defensive front was giving a Florida team that handled LSU's front seven was struggling against that front seven. Like, and this is, again, not to harp on the, like, man, I really wish we had a Rondae Gadsden here, but Florida State won that game because they essentially decided the way to beat Clemson was to just keep throwing one-on-one jump balls because Clemson wanted to play man coverage and didn't want to play zone. So they threw up a bunch of one-on-one balls to their guys. Jordan Travis, it was the only way to prevent Travis from getting a beating. And what ended up happening was that Florida State won enough of those one-on-one battles to advance. And you know what? I think Damian Alford is going to get his. Like, I am not worried that Syracuse is going to move the ball on Clemson because Schrader will hang in there. He'll shake a couple guys. He'll get a throw over to Alford. And Syracuse will get some touches and move the ball down the field that way.
What it's you're saying just is that, for me, Damian Alford to be Keon Coleman.
What I'm saying is that we only have one of them. Florida State has lots of them. And if we had a Rondae Gadsden and Damian Alford and Isaiah Jones, I suddenly think that this matchup is fundamentally different. But instead, we're going to be relying on Donovan Brown and Trey Borpeña, if he's healthy, and Omari Hatcher, who are just not guys that you can do that with. And I'm not, and like the Clemson cornerbacks are very good at shutting down the short stuff. They struggle on the deep stuff. And unfortunately right now, Syracuse is very good at the short stuff, not so great at the deep stuff.
I mean, deep stuff looked good against Army.
I was mostly talking about the middle of the field deep stuff that we talked about that they're just not doing right now.
You mean that part of the field that Schrader can actually throw to?
Yeah, that.
Oh, okay. We should probably
use that. And this all circles back to what we talked about at the beginning. You know what would really help with that? Deep balls over the middle? A running back or a tight end? Mm-hmm.
You know what would really help is Donovan Brown running post routes. with some of that
gas. That too, yeah, that would help a lot.
Like using him across the middle, I'm perfectly fine with. Yes, he's young. Yes, he's probably going to make mistakes, but the pros seem to, the pros as in his wheels, 100% outweigh some of the cons. I also, I'm just looking at Clemson's roster. Do you know who their holder is? The third son of Dabo Swinney.
Oh, wonderful.
One Clay Swinney.
Remember who their kicker is also now.
A guy who keeps missing. No longer.
Remember, they replaced him with someone else.
Yeah, he missed the kick.
He missed the kick at the end of the game. Yeah, but still.
Yeah, they have a functional kicker now.
Number 41 on their roster, Steve.
Oh, Jesus, come on.
Yeah, just so you know, he's old.
Not Virginia kicker old, but he's old.
Jonathan White.
Yeah,
there we go.
Okay. Came out of retirement to rejoin the team in late September.
Exactly, there it is. Jesus. There it is.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, turned. I believe that the broadcast said that he was working as a financial
investor. He had a job lined up in New York.
Yeah.
And then as he was about, he had a job lined up.
He saw the rent crisis and was like, nope, I'm going back to school.
God, wow. Return to the Tigers following an inquiry from head coach Dabo Swinney 3 games into the 2023 season.
Exactly. It's incredible.
How do you do that?
Apparently, he was still enrolled in online classes. So, you know, that's a check.
Okay. Well, that's a thing. Can we get, this is gonna be... after that missed extra point, like, can we get any of our pass kickers on dial? Denberg looks solid for most of his field goals and that. So,
what's Giorgio doing on Saturdays?
Yeah, he's, you know, Friday night game. Saturdays he comes and kicks, and then that's that.
He's a lot on corners, right? Like, so he's got to have some sort of accuracy.
I just kind of appreciate that we are hiding our fear of Clemson through random tangents about Matt Canada and Syracuse men's soccer. It does, you know, it is the way to hide.
Like, I'll be honest, like, yes, the defense is going to be tough, but we mentioned what I think is going to decide this game. I think it's going to be Shipley. Shipley is going to decide this game. If Syracuse can somehow contain Shipley, this game opens up a lot more, in my opinion. Now, the reason why that's going to decide the game, because it's a lot easier said than done to contain Shipley.
The reason that I understand the optimism around this game in particular is because the recipe for beating Clemson is have Clemson screw up on special teams, have Clemson's quarterback be unable to make deep throws, and contain their running back that is the source of the actual offense. Like, that's what happened in...
That was 2017.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, that's what Syracuse does when they play Clemson tight. And if Syracuse were to win this game on Saturday, I would not be surprised. I think it's, like, a 45% chance that Syracuse pulls off the upset, which is insanely high. I also think that there's like a 20% chance that Clemson wins this one by like 3 scores because they just keep handing Will Shipley the ball and Syracuse can't stop him running through the A gap. Like, both of those things are on the table here, and it's what makes this game really interesting, because it really does boil down to stop the run. We have a game on our hands. Don't stop the run. This is just not going to be fun.
By the way, Matt Canada did something on offense.
Was it bad?
Also go back to like who decides this game. Could the most important player on Syracuse's defense now also end up being Kevon Darton?
I like Darton a lot. Steve, let's talk about why we like our short nose tackles. He is probably one of my favorites on the team this year, mostly because what we've seen from him so far is using his less than ideal size that probably prevented him from going somewhere else. And he has turned himself into a really good weapon. Like, against Purdue, it was really obvious that they had no idea, like, what to do with the small guy who is coming up on them and getting leverage every play. Army did a much better job of neutralizing him, and I'm just intrigued because, yes, Clemson's roster is good, but their offensive line has been shaky. Darton blowing stuff up in the middle of the play would be pretty advantageous for Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, he just needs to be that turtle in the middle that doesn't move. Like, get low, stay low, get under their pads, and just make life a living hell for that center and those guards.
Someone show this conversation to Kevin 2 years ago.
That's true. As a walk-on, handing him this, saying he's the key to the game against Clemson.
No, because I distinctly remember 2 years ago in our Slack, Darton being Kevin's least favorite player on this team. And look where we are now.
I mean, as dumb as it sounds, when he first started, everybody was like, we're down to a walk-on defensive lineman. Like, what is going on here? And lo and behold, like, he's damn solid at what he does. So, hey.
So, because eventually what it turned out to be, because I don't think in any other system, Darton would work out. But right. In the 3-3-5, he's the guy you want. Because he's the guy you want to take up space.
Get low, stay where you are, stay plugged in that gap, and be annoying as hell.
Because a lot of other systems, a lot of other traditional defenses are looking for guys to be Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
You don't need that. Nope. Especially in the 3-3-5, you don't need that.
The big thing that I am really looking forward to is that battle there. And on the offensive side of the ball, I really do want to see what the offensive line combo is. Like, if Ellis plays, I'm going to be irrationally optimistic. I do think, though, that at this point, based on how that Army game was going, if Ellis didn't get into the game, like, that, then we were not in good shape. I don't know if he was wearing street clothes or not.
I think Ellis was, but Moore wasn't.
Yeah. So Moore might. Yeah.
I mean, this is, we talk about Moore. We also don't know if Moore would have been in this starting lineup. Ellis, we know what we were getting with.
This is true.
Everything we say about Moore is a large assumption. Pun intended. So hopefully he's good enough to be a difference maker. But also, like, I mean, Petrie didn't look horrible. I don't want to see what he's doing against Clemson's D-line necessarily. But also, he didn't look horrible against the back half of Purdue and against Army. So I don't know. I don't know where that's going to land. No matter what, more healthy bodies are better healthy bodies.
Yeah. I am slightly, I'm slightly concerned, but we're gonna have to wait and see how it goes. I think we're all sitting here going, like, look, we know that this game is going to come down to the trenches. If Syracuse is going to have a chance, they're going to need to hold their own on defense, and they're going to need to be somewhat efficient on offense in that regard. Is there anything else that you're looking forward to or interested in this weekend's matchup schematically?
I mean, I do want to make a note that right now, last week is the first time all year Syracuse has been above the Mendoza line in all categories on PFF.
Let's go.
Even in whatever stupidity that first half was, they ended up with the lowest grade was a 60.0 for run blocking and special teams at 60.6. Everything else was in the green.
They are... They are trending in the right direction. They are top 30 in both, top 35 in both offense and defense SP+. We talked about the efficiency numbers. They're ranked 20th overall in efficiency margin. They're right now look like a solid team. The Clemson game is going to be an indication of are they a solid team or are they an ACC solid team? Which means 7-5, gonna win some games, gonna lose some games that drive you nuts both ways.
I mean, no matter what, we're looking as good as we can going into the, I believe we trademarked the stretch of stupidity. And if we have
stretch of stupidity works.
You know what's weird? I started the season, we're not gonna know what this team is until probably after the bye. I think that still holds.
Yeah. I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you know what helps is Virginia Tech looking like a bag of hot garbage.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech is... I was cautiously optimistic that Virginia Tech was going to be bad. They are surpassing my wildest expectations.
Now, what about Yankee Stadium, Phil?
Well, the flip side to Virginia Tech being hot garbage is that Georgia Tech is showing signs of life, and that was not on the bingo card for 2023.
But what about Wake Forest, then?
Again, ACC. It's just, this is a very, yes, week four was very go ACC.
But to wrap this up, like we usually do on Disloyal Idiots, is Duke good at men's soccer?
I don't.
They're good at one type of football. I don't know if they're allowed to be good at more than one kind of football.
But, well, because they're ranked 11th, and based on everything that's happened to the ACC, I'm not sure if that's a good ranking or not.
It's a weird, such a weird ass season for soccer.
Exactly. Men's soccer was until this latest game was against Louisville, right?
Pitt was our last game.
Oh, no, Pitt.
The 3-2 right? win was Pitt, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, until this last game against Pitt, it was the epitome of, yes, we can get first half leads. It's a crapshoot of whether we're going to hold on to that in the second half.
Yeah, and I'll be curious. I mean, they did lose to Cornell early in the week, but then they beat Pitt. So at 4-1...
By getting a first half lead and then letting things go away in the second half.
Right. So I'll be curious where that ends up, where they end up. I mean, they're currently 7th. We'll see whether they stay the same or drop, likely drop. But I don't know. No one below them is really a world beater either. So Louisville, who they already drew on the year. You've got Duke, like you mentioned. Wake is 14. Notre Dame, 15. Like, the ACC is all in the...
Where's Clemson? Is Clemson even on there?
No, they're not even... they are receiving votes. Mm-hmm. Clemson's receiving 5, and Pitt is receiving 4. Virginia's receiving 7. For all your ACC needs.
Virginia receiving 7. Woof, that's a down year for them.
Yeah. All 3 of them.
Yeah.
I mean, Pitt, historically, not great. Lately, recently. Solid. Yeah. But, hey, whatever. We're a top 10 team, no matter what, in men's soccer, which I will never complain about.
The soccer team and the football team both have a week where, on Sunday night when we chat, I am intrigued to see what our mood is, because it could be very good or it could be very bad.
Well, a lot of it is completely predicated on the fact that the Avengers will actually succeed and that we can reverse the snap, because it looked like Dino was pretty well gone during that broadcast.
I mean, military appreciation day, okay?
Yeah.
Like the camel has to work good in many different scenarios.
Yep, we were full Mr. Wild Hack, I don't feel too good in the middle of that game. There was a brunt. If anyone didn't see
I did you feel good during the game? Because I didn't feel good during the game.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Okay, so to put a wild bow on all of this, game day is going to Duke this weekend. Can we somehow convince Pat McAfee and his crew to go to the Duke Syracuse game at night before game day?
That'd be great.
Oh, God. I mean Koskinen is right next to the football stadium.
start tweeting at McAfee and see what happens. Oh man, respect men's soccer, god damn it. We respect men's soccer here, and that is why we are the Disloyal Idiots podcast, a fans first sports nation podcast. This was chaotic. This is what happens when you get the three of us back together. It's gonna be a fun, weird time, and we will be back here again next Sunday night when we are recapping whatever happens against Syracuse and Clemson. Thank you to everybody who's listening to us on the podcast platform of choice. Make sure you like and subscribe. Help us trick the AI into expanding the Ottoman Empire. Thank you to our friends at Fans First Sports Nation and our friends at noonsmagician.com. If you are watching this on Twitch, reminder, subscribe. Go live Sunday nights at 8 p.m. You get to watch all the fun reactions. Hang out with our friend Mike over in the Twitch chat. Always a good time over there. Also, thank you as always to Homefield Apparel. Been our sponsor forever. We love you guys, and they love us, and that is why they're the best. Gentlemen, go orange.
Go orange.
Go orange.